Hey, this is John Lee Dumas of the award-winning podcast, Entrepreneurs on Fire, and you're listening to the Excelsior Journeys with George Soroy. Prepare to ignite.
So would you say that that's kind of like the lightning bolt moment for
you? And that's
why
I taught myself how to draw, was actually the Little Mermaid, drawing stills of Ariel.
I've got better things to do tonight than die.
Sylvester jumped out of his chair and said, who the F is this?
I remember walking out of the theater with him saying, I'm going to write Halloween.
I'm rather impressed with your research. Rarely do people ask me about Children in the Corn.
It doesn't have to be perfect. Just do it. You know, throw some spaghetti against a wall. See if it sticks.
This is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward. Welcome back to Excelsior Journeys, the road to creativity. This is George Soroy, and thank you so much for being here. As this show has been for so long, I always welcome different people who decide that they want to take the plunge and get their stories, their ideas, their thoughts out on paper. Whenever someone approaches me saying that they have taken the plunge, that they've gotten their work out there, they have crossed that bridge from being an aspiring author, someone who believes there's a book in them, to actually getting it out there, to believing in their work enough to put it out on page, commit it to getting it out there in stores. That is definitely something to be celebrated and commended, and that's exactly why we have our guest here this week. Nkrumah Mensa has been involved in writing for quite a while. She has finally made that turn and committed her works out there to the page and has gotten it out there to the world for the world to enjoy. She has one book out there already. She has another one that's on its way. She has other ones that are in the works as well. And I am just so excited for her journey as an author and as well as someone who is able to make it work as an author, despite also having a full-time job to sustain herself and her family, something to truly be commended and respected, especially here on this show. So it is my pleasure to introduce my guest this week, Nkrumah Mensa. Nkrumah, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, George. This is really exciting.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This whole show really has come about because I have known a lot of people through my own walks of life, myself included, who have their own full-time jobs, who have their responsibilities, but at the same time know that there is something in them creatively that they just need to get out, and they will pursue that, and they will get it out there, and they will show to other people that they can do it too. So the fact that you're here, that you're doing this, then that makes you a perfect fit for the show. So you have one book out and another on its way. Is that correct?
That is correct. So I'm a young adult author, first and foremost. And I have one book out. It's called Anna Survivor. When I wrote this book, I did not realize it was going to become a 7-book series. Ooh. So Anna Survivor came out December of last year, and I'm hoping to have Anne of Ryland out this summer.
Awesome. So this is all going to be the start of one big series?
Yes.
Fantastic. And what was it about the idea of a 7-part story here that got your attention? Why not a trilogy? Why not a series of other books? What is it about that number 7?
Oh, well, 7's my lucky number, first of all. And I think it's so many people's. But for me, when I started writing Anne, the first book turned out to be a 2-book series. Like, okay, it's going to be Anne of Survivor and Anne of Ryland. But my daughter's Battle of the Books team, which is kind of like a bunch of kids who read buttload of books and then battle it out like Jeopardy style.
Fun.
They read the book.
That sounds awesome.
So my daughter is like an avid reader, and she found Anne in a Box, and she was like, why haven't you published this? This is great. And then she shared it with her Battle of the Books team. And I got bullied one day when I came home from work by a room full of book nerds are like, we want to know more about this character and this character. And one of the characters they mentioned, I wanted to know more about her as well. And so once I had Anne of Survivor in the works of becoming published, I started writing about Sophie, who was one of the characters in the story that they wanted to know about. And in writing her story, it turned out to be 2 more books. And within those 2 books, another character came forth and said, tell my story. So now I'm starting book 5 and 6 to tell her story. All these threads of other little stories throughout the book that I don't feel are I don't think I can say enough to create a full novel. So book seven is going to be a series, like a compilation of short stories that wrap up all these other little intricate stories that run through the first six books.
Oh, nice. Like an anthology.
Yes.
Very cool. But you got basically a makeshift group of ARC readers that are all just going to be like, well, let's, or and beta readers really just kind of wanting to see, basically just letting you know what the public wants in a series. So if they're going to be excited about it, then they're going to tell other people and they're going to tell other people and so on and so on. So, and by doing that, you're not denying them what they want. You're not being stubborn and saying, well, no, like that person's just going to stay over there, but this is a story I want to tell. And they're going to lose interest if that wasn't the case. So you're giving them what they want and they're going to, in a sense, almost like feel a little bit of ownership with it.
Yes.
Wouldn't you say?
Yes. And I was hoping for that. His name is Lindsay, and that's because his life is very boring because he's a monk. So I'm like, what does he do all day? But there's going to be, for the readers out there who love Lindsay, there's going to be a day in a life.
So, fun.
So I'm still giving them what they want. His life is very boring.
But have you thought about what led him to be a monk? Because you don't just wake up suddenly and like, I'm going to be a monk. There's going to be something that kind of sets them on that journey. Wouldn't there be?
Yes. And there is going to be a little bit of that as he thinks back to his early childhood.
Nice.
Brought him to that point.
Nice. Very cool. Well, it's like a citizen monk kind of thing. Very cool. That sounds like a lot of fun. So where exactly did all of this really start? Because that's one thing that it's funny that you were also involved in commercial construction, and this show is all about the road to creativity. So you're basically just like building your own road, in a sense, with this. So what is it that got you on this road in the first place? What is it that got you into writing?
Honestly, so long story short, I started out in college and went into psychology. And then I just realized like crazy people will make you crazy. And I don't want that.
Yeah.
So I was like, that's either going to lead to suicide or homicide. And I don't want to kill myself. So I'm going to look great in orange. So rather than doing that, I changed my major at the beginning of my junior year to English and French. And from there, I just didn't know what I was going to do. I was just going to go out into the workforce, find a job, work for a bit, and then maybe go back to school for something else that my parents would believe was more useful. And because English was not it. Along the path, I got married. I had two kids. And the adulting happens. So I was raising my kids, working, got a divorce, got remarried. And then my daughter found this story. But I wrote the story for a friend of mine that I met in college who was going through an arranged marriage.
Oh, wow.
And so on the night before her wedding, we were hanging out and she was like, I was in the room with her and I couldn't sleep because she was pacing all night long. And I was like, so what would happen if we ran? Like we just jump out the window, shimmy down, and we just head out. And she thought I was loony. And so the next day she got married.
Okay. Well, that kind of so she did not run.
Stuck with me. She did not run. Okay. But they kind of stuck with me. And I kept thinking, well, what would have happened if we did run? Well, we're in the 21st century. Back then it was the 20th century. But, you know, 20th, 21st century, there's so many options for women. We can go get jobs. We can get an apartment. We can live full lives. So I was like, it would probably be pretty boring if we ran. It would just be like, oh, we're just starting a different life. But what if this happened in the late 1500s? So then I started digging into that. And then the character Anne popped into my head. And I was like, okay, well, let's explore this. So I wrote Anne. And then I gave it to my friend as a gift.
Nice.
And that was it. And then my manuscript, I just threw in a box until my daughter found it. And she was like, I remember her pulling it out of the box. And she's like, what's this? And I was like, oh, it's just a novel I wrote as I'm cooking dinner. And she comes over. She's like, stop. You wrote a novel?
And it's just sitting there?
She's like, what is this? Mm-hmm. And that's when the Battle of the Books crew got together and bullied me into doing more with what I wanted to do anyway.
I love it. So did you get any sort of feedback like that from your friend when you gave her the manuscript?
She is a total romance novel reader. Mm-hmm. So she was like, how much romance is in this? And I was like, well, it's more action adventure. And she's like, bah, Christina. And I was like, bruh, really? And so her sister read it and she was like, hey, Nick, this is really cool. And I was like, really? You think so? And she was like, yeah, I'm going to have Appa read it. And so since then, we've been working with her to get around to it. But she's got kids now and she travels a lot. So it's like pinning her down to get her to read is a big thing.
Yeah, nice.
And she'll get around to reading it at some point whenever she mm-hmm. slows down. But her sister, eventually. Yeah, exactly. Her sister, just who also doesn't read really my genre, mm-hmm. absolutely loved it.
It's great. So you had some encouragement over on that side, and then you had the bullying from the other side, from your daughter.
From angry teenagers.
Hey, like, sometimes those could be the best bullies you can get. If they're going to bully you into doing something that you've wanted to do but never really pulled the trigger on, then great. You know, just have at it. Those are the kind of people you want on your side.
And they're bullying me for books. Yeah. It's not like, hey, mom, take these hard drugs. It's, hey, mom, write this book.
Right.
So I was like, sure, we can do that.
I mean, basically just like, hey, like, ma, write this book so you can get some lunch money, so you can give me your lunch money.
Interestingly enough, my daughter is now in college studying psych.
So oh, there you go. Kind
of full circle.
I think it's like she already had a knack for it, apparently. So, right. So you decided that you were going to do it. You did it on your own free will. You yes. may have been bullied into it, but you got to make the final call on that. And yeah. so you decided you were going to do it. Was there an extensive period of editing in between that and when you considered it finished?
So first of all, I had to read it again because I know the basic story in my head. I yeah. wrote it, but I actually gave it to a friend of mine and he read it mm-hmm. and made a lot of little notes in the margins. And then I was like, yeah, I don't even know what you're talking about because I couldn't remember the full story. So I went back and read it. And as I was reading it, there weren't a lot of changes. I did rewrite the beginning. It originally had a very storybook Disney-esque beginning, like once upon a time, open the book. And
oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, it's been done so many times. I'm like mm-hmm. boring myself. So rewrote the beginning and I sent it to a publisher that another friend of mine, a guy I grew up with, he's like, hey, I know this publisher. Like, here's this guy. Why don't you talk to him? Well, it turns out the guy actually really liked my book, but he said it was too long.
Hmm.
So
interesting.
Reading through the book again, he wanted to break it into three. I was like, that doesn't make sense. So we broke it into two, which meant that I had to write a new ending for the first yep. book and a new beginning for the second book. And the way it turned out was absolutely wonderful. And I will say that, like, I think the biggest rewrite I really had to do mm-hmm. was, I originally wrote it in my 20s, and I'm almost 50 now. Mm-hmm. So I was,
right, so am I.
I was too harsh on the parents.
Mm-hmm.
I was too harsh on the parents. And that's because I didn't have kids when I wrote it. So the biggest rewrite was giving grace to the parental units. So I was like, okay, I see more where they're coming from. They're not being bullies. Mm-hmm. They're actually trying to set up their daughter for success. And so I had to retool their relationship with their daughter and mm-hmm. with other people in the story as you grow and learn.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so with all of that, you were able to make those changes and really kind of like, it sounds like you were just kind of getting this book caught up to your own writing style. Like, as mm-hmm. kind of realizing that, like, oh, I've changed since then. Like, I went through a similar setup with one of my books that started out as a video game idea, then a treatment, then a script, then many drafts of a script, and then became a novel, self-published in 2002. And then I got the rights back for it in 2011 so I can put it out as an ebook. And then when I reread it, I was like, wow, I don't like this anymore. I like the story. I like the overall story. But like, I mean, technology has passed since since then. I tore it down to the bare minimum and then built it back up. And it became like this five-part serial that was much bigger than I could have imagined. And now it's gone through even more changes since then, now that it's with its new publisher. So it's amazing how many different twists and turns a single story can take. And so here you are, you've caught the book up to your current style. You've been able to, and your own perspective and your own experiences and everything. And you're able to inject all of that into this new draft. It didn't change the story too much, did it?
No, no, it made the story sweeter because there was a vein in the story that I didn't pick up on right away. That was always there because I don't like being didactic in any way, shape, or form. But there was a lesson to be learned that I wasn't picking up until I reread it. So having the parents play into that and having the character play more into that, it became sweeter. Nice. I just want to say it was already like action adventure-esque, but now it's like action adventure-esque with the sweetness, this underlying sweetness of home.
Oh, that's great. That's so nice. And gives it like that extra element that you never even thought had potential to be there at first. Exactly. That's always a cool feeling once you realize that. Just like, oh, there's room for this. And then
it was like, wow, I didn't realize that was happening.
Yeah. Then that's when you have to give yourself permission to just kind of pat yourself on the back a little bit and just like, okay, I just walked into something good there.
So it was so wonderful.
Did you wind up having a team put together for this?
I didn't. It was just me. Currently, I live in North Carolina and I wanted to work with a young female artist in North Carolina that wasn't very well known. So I found someone in the city over from me and I was like, hey, would you like to do a book cover? Since my main audience is young adult girls, I wanted to kind of keep this in the women's wheelhouse. And so she, it was just myself, her, and then the publishing team. I did have a female editor on this as well.
Great.
But so that was my team, was just the three of us and then the publishing team.
Excellent. And so when you say publishing team, was there a small press that you worked with?
I actually worked with Morgan James Publishing Company.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So they picked it up and ran with it. And so glad they did because I didn't know. And I think this is everybody. Nobody knows the process. Nobody knows, like, once you jump into it, exactly how many things are happening, like layout people, editors, like there's so many different sizes of books. Like how are you going to go about that? And what size, how many pages works for a young adult book? And what are some of the major booksellers going to like and not like? So it was a big learning process for me. And I'm glad that I had them to go through with it. Because as I work on other books that they are not going to touch with a 10-foot pole, at least I now have more knowledge so that I can move forward with those in my own way.
That's great. You're able to get this thing in a place where you're obviously very happy with and the publisher is happy with. So they go through the process, they get everything all set up, formatting, the designing, like everything, it's all set. And then you have that moment that every writer yearns for. And you never forget the first time this happens, but you finally get to hold that copy in your hands, that finished copy. Tell the audience about that moment for you.
Oh my gosh. I remember. So I had the book shipped to my place and I got a lot of books because I was going to be doing a book event shortly afterwards. And my daughter sent me a picture of all the boxes in front of our door.
Wow.
And I just remember I was like, I got to get out of work. I want to go home.
It's like, it's there. I got to see it.
It's like, I had to get out of here. And so I literally, I think I left work an hour early.
I had copies shipped to my work. So that way I wouldn't have to wait. And also just because I didn't trust anything regarding the shipment. I had to see it for myself. When my first Excelsior book came out, that to me was everything. And getting to hold that, what a wonderful, wonderful feeling that is.
I mean, there's nothing like it. I don't want to say it's like childbirth because that is in and of itself crazy. But it's like something akin to it, minus all the pain.
So, right. Well, yeah, so I mean, there was pain that went into it, but that moment, there it is.
We're finally here. Yep. It's done. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels, it's always been an idea. But now it's a reality.
It's a reality that you're holding in your hands.
Exactly. You have physical proof. I did this.
Yeah. That's just an absolute wonderful feeling that never goes away. Some people may take it for granted, but there really is nothing like holding that finished copy in your hands and saying, this is mine. This is something that I can hold my own. This is something that will outlast me.
Exactly. And you know, George, I have to say there are books that are not famous by any stretch of the imagination mm-hmm. that really affected my life.
Yep.
And I still have them because I don't even know if they told, I'm dyslexic. So it took me a long time to read. Mm-hmm. And the first book I read cover to cover was called Skyborn. And it's a little like sci-fi book. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows about it. And I bring it up so much because reading that book is what really got me interested in reading and writing. Mm-hmm. I feel like everybody's like, oh, how are the book sales going? Or how is this? How is that? I would love, I mean, who wouldn't love J.K. Rowling money? Like,
right.
We all, mm-hmm. I mean, oh, yeah. We bought a castle. We would all love to retire like that.
Oh, of course.
But if my story can affect one person mm-hmm. the way Skyborn affected me,
yeah,
I consider that a win.
Mm-hmm.
I do. Cool.
And that's something that I make a point to note for this show, because everyone has their own idea of success. Everyone has their own thing that they yearn for. And for some people, it's, for a lot of us, it's to see our books on the big screen or streaming on a channel or something, just getting adapted into a different medium like that. But basically having someone come up to you and say, this inspired me the way that any other book would inspire anyone else. That's a big win right there, because then all of a sudden you're not just inspiring other people to read your book, which obviously we all want. But you're also getting that feeling of, oh, I can do this too. And all of a sudden they're getting their stories put together, saying like, well, that person went through this and this and this. Let me try this and this and see what happens. And maybe there's a story in me. And then all of a sudden we have a potential new generation of authors to keep this whole art form alive.
Or even if it's just like they're having an issue within their life and mm-hmm. you inspired them to take a chance.
Yeah.
In another direction. Mm-hmm. I think that's just a beautiful thing. And I feel that in a way that keeps us going. Like a teacher, for instance. Yeah. They inspire others. Mm-hmm. And that inspiration lives on and on and on. And mm-hmm. not just with you, but with other people. And I know that there's a college professor who was really, really difficult. Mm-hmm. Really difficult. Like, I got him freshman year and all the seniors told me to drop his class.
Really?
Yes. They were like, get out while you can. And he was. I was like, I can handle it. No, dude mm-hmm. was legit hardcore.
Yeah.
And I took his class not once, but twice. And he was difficult. I did not particularly like his classes because they were difficult. But he inspired me in a way that I will not forget. And I've brought his name up to other people. And it turns out I live in the town where he grew up. So I'm currently living in the town where he grew up and went to school. And I remember him saying to me, he said, if you make writing a job, it's never going to come to you. He's like, but if you write because it's in you, things will run smoothly. And he's like, I think you have something in you.
That's great.
I was not the best student in his class. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he saw that I had something to say, mm-hmm. even before I knew I did.
Wow. Isn't that amazing? When a teacher has your back like that.
Yes.
And because that's one thing that I started out going the indie route with my stories. And when I had an opportunity to get one of my books, Excelsior, picked up by a small press, they asked me, why do you want to do this? Why do you want to go from this? You seem to be doing okay on your own. Why do you want to bring a publisher in this? And I just said, I feel like I've hit my ceiling in terms of how far I can get this out. And I need a team around me. I need to know that there's someone investing in me. And that's really what a teacher is doing. They're exactly. investing their time in you. I consider myself fortunate that I have like about five different teachers that did that for me, that inspired me in some way to keep pushing forward. I'll never forget them because of that. So that's wonderful that you had that person with you in your life to do that.
Exactly. And yeah. I don't think teachers get enough credit.
And they deserve all the credit in the world because they're keeping their eyes open at all times.
Exactly.
You may not see the potential in you, but they can.
And your parents might not see it because honestly, mm-hmm. your kids spend more time at school than they spend with you. Like, mm-hmm. Let's be real.
Yeah.
So they see everything that your kid's doing there, if they're paying attention. I mean, there are some teachers out there who really aren't, but the good ones notice.
Yeah.
The good ones notice. And I've even had teachers when I was younger saying I wasn't living up to my potential. And I remember thinking, well, how do you know what my potential is? Mm-hmm. And now that I'm older, I'm like, yeah, so it wasn't. I'm totally slacking in that class. Mm-hmm. But, and some of those professors, the ones that are still alive or I'm still friends with, and they still encourage me to put my best foot forward. Mm-hmm. This time I listen before I wasn't, because when you're 20, you think everything.
Yep.
But I know better now. So I listen to them and they help push me forward. Them, my kids, my best friends. And I love doing this and I love talking about books. Yeah. So
there you go. And once the book comes out, you get to hold that book in your hands and everything. But then you also get to do another big thing that all writers are really, really excited about. And that's the launch party. And yes. So were you able to do something like that?
I didn't do a big launch party. I did a book event where I did a little bit of a reading and sold and signed some books at a coffee shop downtown. And that was fun. It was a lot of fun. Now, I will say I have another book coming out that I'm not publishing under this name, only because it's rom-com and it's not 50 Shades of Grey.
Okay.
But it's more like 35. So still too spicy for my young adult readers. So I'm going to publish that one under my mother's maiden name instead of mine.
Oh, fun.
But that book, I'm going to do a huge launch party for towards the end of the year because I wrote it for a junior high school friend of mine.
Nice.
I met her in Kentucky. But I actually graduated from school in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
So my parents moved a lot.
Nice.
And so even though I wrote it for my Kentucky friend, it is based in Tidewater, Virginia. So the Hampton Roads area. And I want to do a huge launch in that area because it wasn't just a story for my friend. It was also a love letter to that area.
Oh, great.
Where I spent my high school years. So I want to do a really big like blowout event.
Nice.
There.
I actually did something similar for my 20-year high school reunion because I also went to school in Virginia in Henrico County. And I graduated in 94 from high school. And in 2014, our 20-year reunion was coming around. And I reached out to the Barnes & Noble because by that point, the first Excelsior book was out through the small press that I was working with. And I reached out to them and I said, I have a book and I'm going to be in town on this date for my high school reunion. Is it okay if I set up a signing there? And they were cool with it. And I wound up selling a decent amount of copies, not a huge amount, but a decent amount. But some classmates came in, they bought copies, and it was fun. It was a fun thing to do, just kind of like pass the time until that happened. But it was fun. It was a fun time.
George, you were just up the street from me, I feel like, because I was in Chesapeake.
No kidding.
Yes.
Wow.
And I graduated in 95 from Great Bridge.
Oh, there you go. There you go. That's wild. That's so wild.
Yeah. And then my college, I went to Mary Baldwin.
Oh, no kidding.
It was still a women's college. So
okay. I went to Marymount Manhattan up in New York.
Oh, really? So that was, okay. You went way north.
I did. Well, like I was born in New York, so I just felt like that's where I belonged at that time, was just to get back up there. And it wound up being the best thing that could have happened. And stayed in that area for 17 years before making the move over here in St. Louis. It's been a wonderful ride so far. It seems like everywhere I go, there's some sort of a writing community for me to latch onto. That's especially the case here in St. Louis. Different opportunities came up that I never would have thought possible. In New York, everyone is trying to get there. So you have all this competition from people that have built their reputations elsewhere. And when you're in New York, the only place where you can build your reputation is in New York. So it's basically just like trying to jump straight up to the top while everyone else is taking these stairs to get to the top.
Yes.
So it's a weird form of competition that you just feel like you have no chance in unless you try some other means that I had no idea about. So, but it was thankfully now the kind of experience that I've gotten as a result of being here and being elsewhere has definitely helped and definitely strengthened me as a writer. So, but it's been great. So you had the launch party that's pending for the other book that you're working on. But have you been able to do like any speaking engagements like over at schools talking about the young adult series?
I have. So I actually did a book event yesterday
at Ford
House Books in Kernersville, North Carolina. And I love getting out in front of people and talking about books. I do little reading and then we discuss not only the book, but writing processes and how to start writing and where my inspiration comes from. One question I'm sure you get too is this character you? And I always think of that question as yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like giving birth. Are my kids like me? Yes. But are they their own person? Yes. So it's like, yes, this person has some things that I like, but they also do crazy things that I would never do. So for instance, with Anna Survivor, Anne runs away from home. She runs away from home with barely anything. And she takes on the name of Andrew and joins a merchant ship.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because in the 1500s, if you're a young woman on your own, bad things will happen. So she takes on a male persona and she joins a merchant ship. I am too type A for that. Like, I have to have a plan.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, like, I'm leaving home. Let me pack a bag. Let me maybe take the silverware. Maybe I could sell that for money later. Like, I would have, like, I don't know, a pensione, like, set up somewhere.
There you go.
But she does that. And I feel like my characters, they're not, and I love talking about this, they are not me, but they often inspire me. Does that make sense?
It does, like, yeah.
She takes all these chances that I wouldn't necessarily take. But then in my daily life, I'm like, okay, well, I don't want to do this. It's kind of scary. And I'm like, well, Anne left her house and joined a merchant ship. Like, what are you going to do? Like, at least you have a little bit of cash to fall back on. And it pushes, that also pushes me to do more. So talking in these events, it's great because I feel like my readers get to know me.
Yeah.
I get to know more about them and what they're interested in. And we get to share this space together that often creates more creativity. And so I love getting out and doing these events. They are tiring.
They're so tiring. Yeah.
But I like the smaller events where it's just me and the audience more than, and I've done really large events like festivals, and it's a there's so much else going on.
Yeah.
And you're interacting with all the other vendors who may be book people, may not be book people. And then all the people coming through and you just don't know which way you're going. And it's a lot.
It's almost like you're a carnival barker. Just like trying to like,
yes.
You know, and gather around for I have news.
Exactly. Exactly. And then I also feel like I don't have enough time to spend with everyone because there'll be people who stop at my table and I'm talking to this person, but I can't get to you because I'm still answering this question. And then you've moved on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, so I feel like I missed an opportunity. Mm. And sometimes those people will come back around and sometimes they won't. So I do love the smaller venues and the more one-on-one personal care. And yesterday, I have to say, was probably one of my favorite events because I received questions that I never received before.
Yeah.
One being representation.
Oh.
Because I don't know if you've noticed, but I am a Black woman. So my dad is from Ghana and my mom's from Kentucky. And I was born in West Virginia. Mm-hmm. So very wild. You went back to New York. I'm not going back to West Virginia.
No. No, but, I guess not.
So nothing against West Virginia, but just not my shtick.
Yeah.
But I got a question on representation. And yes, Anne is not a Black woman. She isn't.
Right.
Are there Black characters in the story? Yes, there are. I was really glad she asked this question because when I write stories, the characters come to me.
Yeah.
And they're fully formed. They're their own person. And so when I write their story, anything that happens, that character has to respond to the situation based on their own personality. Mm-hmm. So sometimes the book doesn't go the way I expect it to go. And I don't necessarily choose the characters. So I love that because that means it's exciting for me. It's new for me. So when Anne came to me, she came to me as she is. And that's the way it is. I didn't choose. With my rom-com, in which I told this woman, there are very important people of color in Anne of Survivor and throughout the other stories. With the rom-com, the main protagonist is a young Black woman.
Hmm.
So we got to discuss how that was very different from writing Anne's story. And Anne's story, again, was Anne of Survivors written in the late 1500s, early 1600s, whereas my rom-com is written in the 90s. So completely different time frames and completely different things going on.
Yeah.
I mean, hello, they had email and cell phones. Mm-hmm. She's like still bugging it around. So very different stories. But I wanted to show that even in Anne's story, there are people of color doing big things.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're there. Like, we've always been here. But, they're just not the main character.
Understandable.
So I love doing events like that because you get these questions that actually make you think, okay, well, why is it like this? And I think she walked away feeling fairly confident that I wasn't going to not represent us as a people.
That's great. As long as they're walking away happy, then that's always a good thing. That's a big win right there. Now, one of the things I've noticed, and this is something that I've also experienced myself, is that with the various resources that are available to us today, we have an opportunity to take our stories and adapt them into a different medium, whether they're for a play or, in the case of the first Excelsior book, an audio drama, because of what's available to us. Have you thought about taking one of your stories and setting it up in that format?
Well, it's going to be an audio book. I haven't thought of an audio drama for this book. That might be later on down the road because I'm working on so many different projects.
Yeah.
I'm also looking for an artist for a webcomic that I wrote.
Oh, so you're already thinking of different formats. So that's great.
Yes. I'm a huge anime fan, by the way, and I love manga and I love webcomics. So I wanted to see if I could write a webcomic. Turns out I did. Now I just need an artist to work with to get it into that medium and someone I can really work with. I thought I had someone and their art's great, but our timing was off.
Yeah.
Like her she just didn't have the time and I was working on other things. So now I have to find someone else, but I would really love to write a manga.
Nice.
I can't.
Nice. I love it.
I just can't draw.
Right. There's nothing wrong with that though. They have they have the different script writing softwares that are out there now. One of the styles, one of the templates, it's comic book. And so you can take that and definitely run with it. I hope you do. I recommend to any writer that's out there, because there are so many of them that just think if their book ever gets picked up by television or film, then the producer must bow to them and their will, and not a word will be changed and not a word will be removed. It's just like
fantasy.
If they saw no problem in editing J.K. Rowling's book of Goblet of Fire, if they're able to take that book of that size and condense it into a 2.5-hour movie, and in my opinion, improve it by doing that, because there's a lot of filler in that needed to be trimmed. And quite frankly, I could not stomach the thought of an 18-page monologue at the end of a movie where Barty Crouch Jr. is talking about how his whole experience led to that moment. And it was just like, that only works in the written word. That does not, it didn't even work in audiobook. Like, I wanted to just fast forward through so much of that. So, like, that's something that a lot of people need to think about when it comes to adapt to different mediums and cater to the medium that you're looking at. So look at the story you have, see what's essential. And I was able to do that with my audio drama. That audiobook for the first Excelsior book read comes out to just over 7 hours. And I had to take the beginning, middle, and end and make it 2 hours. And you do a lot of editing when you do that. And so that's something that I strongly recommend to anyone. I'm glad to hear that you already have plans for that. That's exciting.
And I think it's because I love reading, mm-hmm. but sometimes I don't have a lot of time. Mm-hmm. So especially when you're writing, you don't have a lot of time to read a novel. And on top of that, I don't want to accidentally steal someone else's work. Like mm-hmm. you sleep on it and then suddenly you see your character doing that one thing that you read someplace else. And I'm not trying to do that. So if I'm in a doctor's office or I have a 30 minutes, I'm going to pull up a webcomic. Mm-hmm. And I love that medium for what it is. It's mm-hmm. like quick, you get your fix, you're reading. I love the art. Mm-hmm. I love different art styles. And I think it's just a beautiful thing to do. And it's completely different. Like, I have read light novels mm-hmm. and then read it as a webcomic.
Well, that's great.
And you get two different things mm-hmm. from that.
Two different experiences. Yeah,
exactly. And then they come out with an anime and I'm like, oh, let me see what that's like. Mm-hmm. So you get something very different from each medium. And I just love it.
And I couldn't agree more with that. So if there is someone that's out there in the same situation that you were, they have a story out there, they're not sure what they're going to do with it. They either put it in a drawer and go on with their lives, or they are thinking about wanting to do something with it. What's something that you would recommend that they do?
First things first, take it out of the drawer. Share it with somebody. I think that's the biggest thing. And that's something I didn't want to do, is because you put your heart and soul into something and then you want to protect it. But this is something that you have to let out. Mm-hmm. It's not going to, you're not going to affect people, and you're not going to put yourself out there unless you let it go. So mm-hmm. I'd say first and foremost, pull it out of the dang drawer or the box or the attic. Give it to someone or make copies. Give it to several people and people that you trust and get that feedback from them. And constructive criticism, not, this is junk, don't ever do this again. Take the constructive criticism, reread it yourself, make it better, and then keep going. Copyright it, and then just keep going. Mm-hmm. And get it to, if you can't get it to a publisher, look into self-publishing mm-hmm. and go that route. There's several ways to skin a cat. You just choose the way that's most effective for you and the Absolutely. Tools that you have. Just know that it's like eating an elephant. Mm-hmm. It's one bite at a time. So mm-hmm. it may seem insurmountable. You can do this.
Yes.
You can do this. And when you're feeling down, we all feel down at one mm-hmm. point or another, then reach out to that one person that always lifts you up and talk it out.
Yeah.
Or just dance in the kitchen. I don't know. Like
sometimes that's all it takes. Like you can wind up talking to someone and say, this is my problem. I need my character to be able to do this and this and this. You can either solve your own question, your own problems by just talking about it. And then all of a sudden, like a specific idea will pop into your head as you're doing it. Or you'll have a moment where, just a quick aside before we wrap this up, I will be forever indebted to one of my work colleagues at Top of the Rock Observation Deck in New York City, because I was working on the sequel to Excelsior and I was saying, like, I want to see a sword fight up on the 70th floor of this building. That would be awesome. It's the best view of the whole city. It would be so cool to have Excelsior and another character just going at it, sword fight and everything up there. And then all of a sudden it hit me. I was just like, how am I going to get the sword up there? Because like, and it was just like, I can't just have it like hidden or anything like that. Like, how's he going to get past security? That's what I'm thinking about. And then all of a sudden, one of my friends said, what if there was an event up there? And all of a sudden it solved every single problem in my head, because whenever there's an event up on Top of the Rock, and it may have changed since then, but when you have a private event where people are not just paying regular admission, they're invited to go up there and sit at a table and enjoy dinner and everything. And then part of the event is going and enjoying the view. You don't go through security. You go through the regular entrance and then you go through a separate elevator and that takes you up. So you're completely separated from the general public. And as soon as she said that, like the birds were singing in my head. It was just like, oh my God, this is perfect. And then all of a sudden that led to this idea and this idea and this idea. And all of a sudden I had the whole second half like mapped out in my head. And so I'll be forever indebted to that person. So yeah, talking it out, I can't be a bigger advocate of that.
Totally helps. Yeah. Totally helps.
Yep. And so where can my listeners find you on social media?
Oh, you can find me at The Nkrumah Mensah mm-hmm. on Instagram. And my website is www.between-the-line.com. Nice. And Anna Survivor is everywhere. It's anywhere books are sold. Mm-hmm. You can get online, walk in the store, Anne of Survivor.
Excellent. And just like Nkrumah was saying before, get your work out of the damn drawer. And that speaks to everything. Like if you have it in your head and then you're just thinking like, oh, this is as far as the story's going to go. No, get it out of the drawer of your head and get it on the page. If you have it on the page and you've printed it out and you look at it and just like, oh, this is crap. And then you put it in the drawer, get it out of that drawer and do something with it, because you can't change someone's world until you do that, until you get that work out there. She has done that. I hope that all of you who have those ideas that have been cultivating them for so long and working on them, and maybe you're confident that they're not going to get anywhere, push that aside, get it out there, because I've said this many times and I will say this every week now. In these crazy times, the world needs your stories. The world needs your vision. The world needs you now more than ever. So for Nkrumah Mensah, this is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward, and I will see you next week.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Excelsior Journeys. I hope it was both inspiring and entertaining. Special thanks to Zach Comtois for providing new music for the intro and outro. Please take a moment to leave a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please share it with your friends and subscribe to your platform of choice by going to he'sgotit.com/podcasts. While there, you can also fill out the application to be a guest, inquire about sponsorship opportunities, and click on the Buy Me a Coffee link if you wish to give your support to the show. All interaction is very much appreciated. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for the show, please direct it to George@hesgotit.com.